think you probably all know the torrid time the demonstrators had. It's only a very small place, 9 miles long by about 4 miles wide. There'd never been more than about 12,000 people living there. So all this has come from basically a large village in the UK. The colony was kind of started off in 1632, and it was then used as a refuge for Catholics from Virginia, and then Cromwell decided he'd put Irish political prisoners there as well. So that carried on. There was a big battle with the French in 1667, which finally Vice Admiral John Hartman won. He defeated the French and Dutch navies off Nevis. But the French came back again in 1712, destroyed everything that had been done. And it carried on a bit like that right through. They founded the Founders Packet off in 1688, and then in 1702 you could actually get a ship from Falmouth to the West Indies for 12 quid. you could get out there, and it was that. There's very, very little material from Montserrat. We start off here with a couple of early letters, about 1773, and they are worth reading. One guy is pleading to his brother for what must be around 350,000-400,000 quid in today's money to complete the purchase of a state together with Negroes. And it's worth reading, and how you ask your brother for that kind of money, I don't know. It's very hard to actually put a figure. The sum there he's after is £7,643. And the House of Commons in about 2000 produced a paper trying to get the buying power, and it's about 140 times less than it was then, but land and things were a bit difficult. The French had another go in 1782. Britain got it back just after the start of the War of U.S. Independence, which was then 75 to 82. 1790 sees the first markings out of Montserrat, and there are some examples here. And there are very few pieces between there and 1809, perhaps about 35 pieces are known. And at that time, Britain was at war, particularly again with the French. And a lot of the packet boats were attacked at sea, and the packet commander's job actually was to ditch the mail rather than let it get through. So they used to hang out over the back of the ships, and someone would take an axe to it if they were attacked. And war was a little bit more gentlemanly. If you were attacked by a much bigger ship, you fired one little shot and then held up your hands. So, and then for some unknown reason, there are very few, well, there are really no postal markings from Montserrat after 1809 until 1836. A cache of correspondence was discovered in a French bank in about 2000 or 2002, I can't remember exactly, and some three-line markings appeared, but I think only five of those are known, and that's about it, and I'm afraid I haven't got one here to show you. No one sent them to me. There are some letters here of the marks that were coming between there, but they don't tell us an awful lot. The Montserrat Fleuron appeared in 1836. There are a few examples of that known. There's one there, it's not a very good one. It lasted about 4 years, and another CDS was sent out. And then another one about 5 years later. Two strikes, the habit of it, aren't very good. But that started with a little A at the bottom. And there's a copy here of one of the GB used abroad, and that's missing the A. Quite nice to see. And then for the next 15 years or so, they used the Montserrat paid stamp. The first stamps that ever came out of Montserrat were actually revenue stamps in 1866, and here is an example of some of the printings. And curiously enough, on piece here there are some examples of where they've actually been through the post, and people probably know about Montserrat A's and P's and things, but there's a piece here with a Montserrat A and a Montserrat P on the same piece of paper. So that's that. There was another CDS which I've not mentioned there. Eventually Montserrat got round to having its own stamps in 1876. The whole problem with Montserrat was nobody ever made any money out of it. The total mail in any year was no more than £100, and it reckoned it cost the packets £500 to go there. So they were always, they never had a very good service. And when they wanted their own stamps, the Crown guys said, right, well, you can have them, but they've got to be antique stamps overprinted. And in the book that has been edited at Britners, they talk about an 18mm overprint. I've never seen one. And there are ones here, I think, are 16 and 16 and a half. But if someone's got an 18mm, I'd love to see it. A couple of examples. I think there are only two complete covers in the sixpence. That is on a large piece. It's not actually a full cover. Next we come to when they ran out of stamps, 1883-1884, the postmaster allowed them to be bisected and in some cases trisected. This one here is a sixpence cut in three and a penny cut in half for the twopenny halfpenny rate. And that was used for a stamp 100 years later. After 1885, there shouldn't have been any bisects, but there are two examples here. One in 1889, where it's been used to uprate a postcard to the right rate, and I mentioned earlier this little P, the Montserrat P on the half there, which has not been seen before 1887, so they're all after the Puckett date. We next come to the second issue of Montserrat stamps, twopenny halfpenny fourpence in blue and mauve. It's both on CC and CA paper. There seem to be very, very few covers of these stamps around. I've seen one with a fourpenny blue on. I've never seen a twopenny halfpenny on a cover anywhere. And there's examples of the fourpenny mauve and the penny rose on the cover. Right. Next bit. I'm trying to get through this very quickly. This is the Victorian issue, okay? It started in 1890. All the stamps for the other Leeward Islands, the Bogues, etc., as Simon showed this morning, they were replaced by this federal issue. There's just a set of specimen stamps and a selection of the values used. This is quite fun. There's a little island just off Montserrat called Redonda. And there is a cover from Redonda. There's nobody really lived there except some guys who mined the deposits of guano, which they use for fertilizer. There must have been a lot of birds out there because they got 7,000 tons a year. And cans of goat. Yes. So,
what a smell.
Indeed. Anyway. Most of the postal stationery or postal history you see from Montserrat is in the form of pre-printed stationery postcards. There are quite a lot of those around, and there are various issues here, and I managed to acquire a little while ago the pencil essay from the De La Rue archives of the first issue of the reply postcard. And you will notice there's a half-key card, which is no longer printed in French because it was used locally. UPU was there. More of the Queen Victoria stationery. At the end of Queen Victoria, they had a load of stamps left over, and they overprinted them with a penny, and there's some examples there of Montserrat usage. People collect these narrow overs and one thing or another, but they are all on the sheet there. The selvages were taken off before they were overprinted. And this is the sextaginary overprint from 1907. That's a half sheet, and that's the only cover I've seen from Montserrat where the Sexagenary used. It's about 10 days after the date of issue, which I was pleased to find. These people talk about doubles on here. To my mind, they're not really doubles, they're bounces. There are one or two where they've had albino overprints, which have been secondly impressed, but I don't have one of those here. That's Mr. Farmer's domain. That top right-hand corner one has got a bounce on it. Finally, Montserrat gets round to issuing its own stamps again. 1903. There's a selection of proofs there, colour trial. And this curious fellow I found, has got no centre. Why he's got no centre, I don't know. But it's a perfectly good bit of Crown CA. It doesn't appear to have been tampered with in any way, but it's there. And these basically are just examples of the usages of the different stamps from that issue. As I say, this collection is about usage rather than things, rather than stamps themselves. Newspaper wrappers were very popular, quite a lot of them around. There's examples used out there. And if you could imagine, in George V's time, they actually printed a farthing newspaper wrapper. 960 to the pound. Keep you going. Two curious covers here. There was a CDS sent out in 1907, it's recorded, and I think this is the only known cover that actually got a use of this CDS. Nobody else has come up with one. And there's also this little fellow here, postcard gone to Hungary, and that's got a Montserrat C cancellation. About a year after all the others, and the DE is reversed. Now, if anybody here can help me with these things, I'd love to know. These are dumb cancels. I can date one from this postcard as 1904. I think they were used on inter-island mail, but I can't find any information about them. And I know this one came from Montserrat, because it's the daughter of the US consul at the time in Antigua, and I've got another postcard from her to her mother 2 days before when she was in Montserrat. So we know it came from there. There's also a little Cinderella there. The next, we've got some examples of official paid. And any word with Mr. Oliver, if he's here somewhere.
I'm here.
Yeah, well, there are the official paids as I recognise them. And the one which is illustrated in your book, I think is something that has made that quite proud. It never really existed. But that's different there. And it's this one here. Just going back in time, the second issue of Montserrat stamps, 1908 and onwards. And I put this one in here because it's about the first cover I ever bought. Just Rudolf Friedel, Vienna. I thought that was amazing. When I started collecting these stamps, I just received a postcard at home that said Peter Tribe, Guildford. So I thought the post office was wonderful. We come over here. And these are that issue, more or less in chronological order of usages, and you can't get away from the Leeward Islands usages because they were intermingled with Montserrat. This is all Edward VII. We come on now to George V, the first issue, the specimens of proof and whatever, and it was on Crown CA and then later Malta Script CA, and there were a lot of those stamps, and the different dates are on there. And again, these are usages of all the different values during that time. And right at the end here, there are some examples of postal stationery uprated. And this is quite nice. This is a Leeward Islands postcard, which has got Christmas greetings on the back. It's been overprinted by what I could only presume was a relative of the governor of Montserrat. Leeward Islands cards for his Christmas greetings. A.C.K. Tibbets was a governor for a few months during 1927, and this is a P. Tibbets, so wherever. And there's also a nice here, a U.K. reply paid card sent out to the post office in Montserrat, and the postmaster has sent it back to the U.K. These were a little early, but out of order. The war stamps. the three issues. This one is nominally before it was issued. I think they were issued on the 6th of March, but this cover says the 4th of March, so we'll take that. And this cover of the shows the varieties in the penny halfpenny. The long slash under one and the narrow dates, you can see that. Next selection is registration. Starts off in 1900, that's the first known use of the registered hand stamp. And it takes you right through, actually, almost to the modern day, of the different uses of registration and the labels. I did do a piece about this in Bulletin 217, and much to my surprise, I found yet another variety of registration label. The only one that doesn't have a comma after Montserrat, and it has different perforations. So there were quite a few in the 1920s. The other thing that's quite interesting is the T, used to show underpaid postage. 1879, the UPU said, we're going to put a T on things from many countries if they arrive in another country with insufficient. Now, the Montserrat T went out in 1909. This is clearly put on somewhere else because it's 1895. This, I think, is the first use known of the Montserrat T, which is in 1910. A nice postcard sent to Vienna. It's rated 10 heller and it's got the 10 heller stamp on it. In 1932, quite a number of things were sent to St. Lucia to get these postage due labels put on, but only one of those three has the correct size for a Montserrat T. The other two are too big. And this is another one to the UK, and I think this is the last recorded use of the T, which is, forgive me, 1955. So it's had a very long life. And these are other usages of postage. The next things are the village councils. Surprisingly, for such a small island, they actually had about 10 different little sub-post offices. I've not been able to acquire any of the temporary rubber date stamps. I think there were three or four known. They came up in Feagers auction last January, or January 4, and they went for over $3,600 each before tax, so I didn't acquire those. Sorry about that. Three of the sub-post offices, Harris, Salem and Cudjoe Head, had temporary rubber registration labels, and these are the first known uses of the one in Harris and in Cudjoe Head. And this also one in Cudjoe Head is it opened for a short time in 1928 or 1927, for about a year, and there are four covers known from it, and that's the last date of use there. And that is the first date of use of the Salem one. The book, originally written by Brittner and re-edited, talks about two types of Salem hand stamps. I'm not convinced there are two, particularly because the bottom of the L is slightly bent, and it seems to be there all the way through, although this very late one in 1990 is slightly different. And these are from St. Peter's, Bethel, Dyers, the other one's Cork Hill, which was, there's a picture I took of it after the volcano there, and it's just a derelict little health centre. We next come to airmail, it's a long story about the airmail, because in 29 and 30 the New York Rio Buenos Aires airline was trying to corner the business. They actually went bust in 1930, even bought up by Pan Am, but one of their experimental ones was to have a plane from Montserrat to Antigua. Mail was bagged up for it on June the 6th and June the 20th, a fortnight later, but it didn't actually get into the air until the following February. Except someone might be able to help me out. I have a cover here that says via airmail, and it's gone out on June the 17th, and it got to Antigua the next day, so something got out. And you might be amused to see the Montserrat post office use first airmail, but they took out the first and use it to stamp airmail on later.
And these are some modern air letters. 1932, the 300 years anniversary. There's a colour proof there. There are a few and various usages.
This pile is the only stuff I've got here from Georgia 6, which is World War II sensor labels. They're quite difficult to display because you really need to see both sides, and it's quite hard to do that, but it gives you an idea. There are two covers here from Harris as opposed to Plymouth, and they seem to have taken a different route because they have different sensor labels on them. That's a little page about the electric cancer that came in. That, I think, is the first known day of use of it. And as well as the electric cancer, there's a hand stamp on it. And the last section here is ship cancers from about 1920 onwards. And they just illustrated various things and packet work marks. So there's a lot to look at. If anybody wants to ask me any questions, please do. And I'll try and answer them. But thank you for listening. I know after lunch, a few beers, falling asleep, but I hope it's been worth looking at.
Well, if there are no questions, why don't we look at this display and sit down, and afterwards I'll ask Charles Freeland to give a vote of thanks. And questions.
And Robbie, you stay up.
I'll stay here.
Now, I'm sure that if anybody had any questions, I'm sure they've already tackled Peter before you sat down. But has anybody got any more questions to ask Peter? Right, I will ask Charles to give a vote of thanks.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you. Peter. Yeah, too many Peters around here.
Well,
I think the first thing I would say is that Peter gave me a lot of help in the rewrite, the second rewrite, is it, of the Bricknell Mantra, particularly on the postal markings, yeah. Peter, and all the errors in the book are due to him. So, yes, I mean, this is a great, what I call, study collection. Mm-hmm. Lots of stuff that we would all be interested in and probably have in our collections. And as a, you know, people in this, at our level, I find this a very interesting collection because it's really work in progress, Peter, I think you'd accept.
Oh, yes.
You have a big advantage over me that you've been to Montserrat and I have not. I was quite surprised to hear it was only 12 miles long and 4 miles wide.
Miles long.
Yeah. So it's a bit, it's a bit like Anguilla. You know, like you could walk it in a day, but Anguilla's flat, whereas Montserrat has a few volcanoes, if I remember rightly. There's some very good stuff here, but I was just saying I'd like to cherry pick, and I think you'd accept that there's stuff that's very interesting, studied material without being kind of discreet. You've got what, 6 or 8 bicep covers, and you were very modest in not drawing attention to one or two of these here that, in my view, are probably legit bicep.
This one, I think,
the book post. These were used for a book post, right? And although Mr. Pierce and some of these familiar names used it to fabricate all sorts of postal history for us, which is fine, we like it, there are also a few here that I think are probably quite legit. The editor of the Gazette, I mean, nice thing. Going to St. Kitts, Brian, you've probably had a look at this one. You've got one Thompson floor at least.
Yes.
Only one.
Sorry about that.
They're very difficult actually on Montserrat. There are only 3 stamps that get them. And funny enough, I was very lucky to get them, or happy to get the Halfpenny quite recently in one of Phoebe's sales. I've only ever seen one, which was in a big collection of Peter Jaffe's, which I think he probably bought from Michael Hamilton. And this one that came up, I think Bob Hill's collection was sold by Phoebe. It was the second I'd seen. And it's probably the cheapest the cheapest Thompson floor in the whole of the catalogue. So you've got to take these prices and numbers with a pinch of salt. What else? We got some very nice pre-adhesive here. Peter was very modest. He didn't mention his horseshoe, which is a beautiful cover here with a cracking strike, and one or two of the straight line and CDS marks. Are there 4, Peter, of these CDS marks, one with a paid in them? It's for a tiny little island.
Paid is here.
It's amazing how they got through four councillors of in this just kind of CDSs in this period. And of course, this is an important cover, the GBUs, sixpenny GBUs. You said it, well, it's a wrapper. It's got a rather smudgy stripe, but I think the other cover, which Peter McCann has, is probably not much better. It's still got, right. It's got cross writing across it too.
Yeah.
So all in all, it's a very nice collection. And I'm very glad we persuaded you or twisted your arm to put it up and get it in shape, because you will have learned, Peter, from preparing the exhibit.
Exactly.
You will learn something.
Oh, yes.
You learn what you know, but you also learn a bit of what you don't know.
Yeah.
it's which is very good discipline for everyone. So it's pretty Chris Harmon isn't here to kind of give his practiced eye over it. But as someone who collects this avidly, I think it's a terrific collection. Thanks very much for coming and showing it to us.
Thank you. Okay, gentlemen, look away.